Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Vice President Kamala Harris in Pittsburgh for debate preps ahead of Tuesday's ABC News presidential debate. But she's also taking time to do some radio interviews and telling Univision's host Angel Baby of Euphoria More that it's time for America to chart a new course away from Donald Trump's policies and rhetoric.
We need to turn the page on this Trump era, you know, this person who has talked about how immigrants poison the blood of America, this person who seeks to divide our nation, belittling people, belittling members of the military, for goodness sake.
The U.S. adding 142,000 jobs in August, slightly lower than expected, but in line with the Federal Reserve Board's goal to cool the labor market, all to help tame inflation. Medical teams in Gaza say they vaccinated more than 161,000 children in the second phase of the polio vaccination campaign in southern Gaza. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section at WGBW.fm.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. More official prison time for the Waukesha Christmas parade attacker. A judge in Milwaukee yesterday sentenced Daryl Brooks to 9 years for running over the mother of his children just weeks before he used the same vehicle to kill six people at the Christmas parade. Brooks is serving six consecutive life sentences for the infamous attack. Democratic vice presidential candidate Tim Walz tells Civic Media's Chad Holmes what it took to win six terms in a Republican-leaning U.S. House district.
I've learned how to compromise without compromising my values. I don't believe I have cornered the market on all the good ideas, and I don't believe you get your way only.
Walz says he believes there are more things that unite Americans than divide them. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. Teachers at Badger Elementary School in Appleton were surprised Thursday with a $5,000 donation from Gusman Subaru. Each teacher will receive $500 to use in their individual classrooms to purchase supplies to help some 250 students succeed. The Subaru Loves Learning program provides funding for high-need schools to give back to the communities. A red-tailed boa constrictor is not the type of snake that one might expect to find hanging out in northeast Wisconsin, but that's exactly what a woman walking her dog in the Oconto County town of Lakewood encountered this week. All 10.5 feet of it. Northern Oconto County Animal Control helped capture the snake and took it to the DeYoung Family Zoo in Wallace, Michigan. Oconto County Sheriff's officials are still investigating, but they believe the snake was a pet that got out or escaped on its own. And that's what you need to know. I'm Lisa Hale, WGBW News.
The NFL season is underway. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska with sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. Last night, the Kansas City Chiefs defeated the Baltimore Ravens 27-20. Tonight, it'll be the Green Bay Packers taking on the Philadelphia Eagles in Brazil to open up the Packers campaign. Quarterback Jordan Love is ready to go this season.
I definitely think it's a very cool opportunity to be able to play in front of a fan base who a lot of those people might not have seen an NFL game, might be their first NFL game, so I'm excited for it.
Kickoff tonight is after 7 p.m. You can hear the game on WRJN in southeastern Wisconsin, WRCO in southwestern Wisconsin, and WCQM in northern Wisconsin. Today is the start of a three-game homestand for the Brewers as they take on the Colorado Rockies. Milwaukee leads the NL Central by 9 games over the Chicago Cubs entering play today. The Brewers have lost 3 of their last 4 games, all of them in extra innings. And tonight is the third week of high school football in Wisconsin. Check your local Civic Media station for matchups. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and cool tonight, lows down to the low 40s. A beautiful weekend is ahead with sunshine. Highs in the mid-60s Saturday and mid-70s Sunday. Highs climb through the 80s next week. Dry weather ahead with more sunshine. Currently at 64 degrees.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this civic media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous, unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of civic media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
Native American issues are human issues. Join Robert Pilot with Native Roots for their program Awake at their new time of Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Awake is proudly sponsored by Wisconsin Community Health Representatives.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in a quick podcast form? Search no more. Find it now at WGBW.FM. Your news just for the Green Bay area. I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News.
John Minow and Jim Schmidt.
We'll be back Monday morning with weather from meteorologist Brittany Merlot, and she's Kurt Nick.
Plus, Shannon from the new community shelter stops in to talk about the upcoming bowl-a-thon. Join us.
Minow and the Mayor, weekday mornings 6 till 9.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wisconsin, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 3 o'clock, and that means it is time for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Now, my next guest, she is not herself a millionaire, but in honor of Labor Day, this week, Maggie and the Millionaires are going to be talking and focusing on being overworked and underpaid. The fact that we all, us middle-class folks, work very hard for our money in America, and we're maybe not quite getting ahead as we should. My guest is Dr. Caitlin Henderson. She has let me know that I can call her Katie, so I don't mean to take your degrees away. Dr. Caitlin Henderson, she's a senior researcher at Oxfam, which is the largest anti-poverty organization in the world. Dr. Henderson is the lead researcher and author of Oxfam's Best States to Work Index, which Brian and I will put in the show blurb from today so that you can all check it out, which looks at how states treat workers and working families in the U.S. Previously, Dr. Henderson was a Brent Scowcroft Award Fellow with the Aspen Strategy Group. So with all of that, welcome, Katie. Thanks so much for making time.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
This is so important. But before we jump in specifically to how Wisconsin is doing compared to other states, tell us about what the Best States to Work Index is, and how long have you been doing this report, and how does the index work? Like, what are the inputs? How do you rate these things?
Definitely. So our Best States to Work Index is a piece of research that looks at 27 different policies across three major themes, and those are wages, worker protections, and rights to organize. And we track these 27 policies across all 50 states, DC, and Puerto Rico, and we rank the states on how they perform, with the idea being we're really encouraging a race to the top of the index. And the index was really born in a moment when the federal government wasn't doing much to improve worker policies and help out low-wage workers and working families. So the idea was really, while the federal government isn't doing enough, let's take a look at what states are doing to really step into that gap. So we rank all the states on whether those policies do or don't exist, in order to really celebrate where progress is happening and try and encourage where progress can be made.
So why did you focus on these three categories? Again, just to refresh everybody's recollections, you're looking at wages,
worker protections and basically whether or not the right to organize in a labor union is protected under state law. How are you measuring those things? Why did you focus on those three items?
Definitely. Great question. So we've been doing this index for about 6 years, and the research really started when we did a huge scoping exercise of what are the policies that are most necessary and most important for workers in general, but especially those low-wage workers that maybe are not receiving benefits from their employer. So a lot of folks that have great jobs have great things like good wages and paid leave and all kinds of protections at work. And so what happens when workers are not guaranteed those from their employer? What happens when they rely on the state or the federal government to set that standard? So that's how we kind of created the list of the policies and really thinking, you know, what is the most important thing for workers? And there are some very obvious answers, like a minimum wage. Right. And you know, I think we all recognize the importance of paid leave, especially in this post-COVID moment when having the ability to take a sick day was so critical. But also there's a lot of great information on the union difference. And so we really wanted to look as well at how states were supporting unionization, but not just unionization, also, you know, collectively bargaining for public sectors and really trying to get a holistic picture of what is most important for that low wage worker and their families.
I know that you added a new category or specifically called out warehouse workers in this year's most recent report, which I found fascinating. Immediately my head went to, oh my gosh, of course we're talking about Amazon, right? And frankly, some of their now notorious, what I would call union busting tactics that they have deployed. And it also raised for me, I want to kind of ask you about this as one big, very broad category. I understand as a lawyer and someone that both was in a collectively bargained unit and then entered management and had unionized workers working with me. My understanding has been that the National Labor Relations Board has been effectively like defanged sort of in the post-Reagan era, right? And that their ability to really penalize companies like Amazon for union busting has been quite neutered, and they don't have as much power as they did, which speaks to the very need for the index in the first place and for states to step in. So all of that is a really big open-ended question for you, talking about warehouse workers.
Yeah, so let me take one quick step back just to say, sure. The really cool thing about this index is that it is a dynamic living piece of research. So we are able to add policies every year when we see sort of a changing landscape for workers. And one of those changing landscapes that we're really seeing is the increased use of technology in workplaces. And I think warehouses are one of the best examples of that, where mm-hmm. we're hearing a lot more about the use of technology, not just to surveil workers and keep tabs on them, but to institute quota systems to mandate production. What's hard is that a lot of these quota systems are really unobtainable, and they're causing a huge influx, or increase rather, of injury in the workplace. And so one of the reasons that we included the warehouse worker protection policy to the index this year is we're seeing some states really pay attention to that and create new policies that are really setting the standard, not just for other states, but also for the federal government, of what can be done to support workers in what is a very dynamic and changing landscape for workers as we're moving into these new sort of hybrid environments where it's both technology and people supposed to be doing the work. So that's one of the nice things about this research, is that it can respond to a changing world. And then to your question about what does this mean and what are we seeing when it comes to the National Labor Relations Board? You know, for folks who are unfamiliar, that is the entity that sort of oversees the ability for unions to form when you want to create a new union. That's who you register with. It is a federal government entity. And you're right that there has been a weakening of the National Labor Relations Board for the last many years. It means it's harder to form a union. It's harder to sustain a union. And that's actually just looking at the federal level, right? And this piece of research, when we're zooming into the state level, we see for sure that, you know, National Labor Relations Board aside, where you have those right to work laws, it makes it even harder to get even the first step, which is to make a union. And what we're talking about here is, you know, the repercussions of if you're trying to stymie unionization is so important, but that's even step two, especially in those states that have the right to work law on the books.
So two questions, and I don't want to forget either of them. The first one was, I was wondering, Dr. Henderson, if you could describe how truly incredibly onerous some of these warehouse worker quotas are. I have seen some of the reporting on this, and I could not believe what was being asked of human beings. It was just, the quotas were basically, as you noted, unmeetable, and the mental stress as well, which then also contributes to more on-the-job injury. Can you give folks an idea that they might be able to understand how huge these quotas are that people are being asked to meet in Amazon warehouses?
Yeah, and you know, we're seeing, I think a lot of people reference Amazon as the big instigator of this. And I think that more than just Amazon warehouses are starting to use this policy, which is why we need to really think about it. But we have some great partners that are doing sort of the leading research on this. So I cannot take credit on the information that we do have about these types of quotas and the impact, but it's effectively the idea that you have to be on your feet for essentially 7-8 hours at a time at breakneck speeds, reaching and pivoting and moving and trying to fulfill tens to hundreds of boxes full of things. And it's a rate that is just not tenable. And it means that people are constantly injuring themselves, whether it is throwing their back out or being physically injured from a machine. You know, it's just really increasingly more and more dangerous. And it's so important to pay attention to, because we are very reliant on warehouses now to fulfill even our most basic needs. So many people completely shop online. And so we need to really pay attention.
Yeah, every box you get, somebody had to pick that product off a shelf and get it in the box. And again, the speeds that I've seen and some of the firsthand accounts of workers have just been shocking, in my opinion. Listen, my special guest this half hour for this Labor Day week, honoring workers in America, for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. She is not a millionaire, but her name is Dr. Caitlin Henderson, senior researcher at Oxfam. We got to take a little bit of a short step away to take care of some of our business, but we'll be right back with Dr. Katie, because I want to talk about these right to work laws, and then I want to find out, how's America doing? How's Wisconsin doing? Because I have a little sneaking suspicion that we ain't doing so well, because we've got one of those right to work laws as well as Act 10. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back with more for Maggie and the Millionaires with Dr. Caitlin Henderson, senior researcher at Oxfam, the largest anti-poverty organization in the world.
This is the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Bed and I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Barely getting by.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You are in the 3 o'clock hour, so it is time for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. My special guest this afternoon is Dr. Caitlin Henderson, a senior researcher at Oxfam, the largest anti-poverty organization in the world. She and Oxfam have just released their report for this year called the Best States to Work Index, which looks at how states treat workers and working families across the U.S. Before the break, Katie, we were talking about right to work laws, which I always think is a really interesting name for these pieces of legislation, because everybody's like, well, right to work. Yes, that sounds good. I support everybody's got a right to work. But what are these? What does this legislation actually do? To basically be called the anti-union bill instead of the right to work bill. It'd be great if you could explain.
Yeah, absolutely. So a right to work law is effectively a law that makes it harder to form and maintain unions. It sort of takes the teeth out of unions a little bit. It takes money away. It means that you no longer can require dues from your members. It makes it harder to unionize. It makes it harder to collectively bargain together. And it means that a lot of the benefits of unionization is pulled out from under them a little bit. It makes it a little bit weaker to be part of a collective unit when you're going to the bargaining table and trying to negotiate for things like benefits or salaries or working hours or pensions or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, just some of the specifics for folks at home. If you've heard this, what it means is that each year, any existing union has to effectively recertify. In other words, the membership has to say, yes, we want to continue to have a union. And people have the option to opt out and not have any of their wages go to union dues. All of that sounds really interesting and maybe a little appealing, except that, of course, what you have the sort of inertia element of this, because it requires an affirmative action by workers every single year. We all are suffer from inertia. We generally will tend to take fewer actions when all else is equal, so it's less likely workers do that. And also you then run into a fundamental collective action problem. All workers benefit from the union bargaining, but if you're opting out, you're effectively shirking or free riding on the union benefits that your union provides to all workers for the most part. We could get into some specifics on that, but just wanted to let people get a little bit of a baseline there. So let's jump in. How is America doing overall for working people and working families?
Frankly, it really depends on where you live. Mm. One of the big reasons we did this index is because the federal or national standards are so low, and some states are doing so much to make things better that now there's widening inequality totally based on the geography of where you live. And that can include neighboring states, which is really complicated. In this country, where you live shouldn't mean whether or not you get paid a fair wage or whether you're protected at work. But increasingly, that is the situation because there hasn't been movement at the federal level. I think Wisconsin is actually a really good example because Wisconsin neighbors two states that have much higher wages in Illinois and Minnesota. In both Illinois and Minnesota, there's paid leave. So you have the ability to have a paid sick day, not lose a paycheck if your child is sick. And in both Minnesota and Illinois, there's some stronger protections around the right to organize. So you can live 5 miles from the border of a different state and yet be paid significantly less and have significantly fewer protections. So as a country, we are really waiting for the federal government to step in and create a higher standard. But if you're living in Oregon or California, Washington State, DC, you're doing a lot better than some of your neighbors, which is honestly not super fair.
It's not super fair. It also, in Wisconsin, we hear from many of our business owners, Wisconsin's a great manufacturing hub of the United States. Businesses love to come here because our workers are skilled. We traditionally and reputationally work really hard and are incredibly productive. And yet you set up this sort of inequity and it will lead to brain drain or just worker drain. People will leave because they're not going to get the same level of wage and benefits as they would in some of our neighboring states. How is Wisconsin specifically doing on this best states to work index relative to some of our neighboring states and overall?
Yeah, so Wisconsin is ranked at 38 out of 52. So again, this is all 50 states, DC and Puerto Rico, if you're wondering where that 52 is coming from. So Wisconsin's in the lower half. And one of the big reasons for that is because a lot of Wisconsin's laws in regards to workers are reliant on the federal standard. Wisconsin has a minimum wage of $7.25, which is the federal standard. Wisconsin has no paid leave. Wisconsin doesn't extend many protections to workers that we consider federally excluded, like domestic workers. And Wisconsin is one of those right-to-work states that doesn't have many protections for unionization. I will say, and credit where credit is due, because I think it's important to identify where progress is needed, but celebrate where there is positive policies. Wisconsin steps up in a lot of ways for farm workers. And I think that's important to identify. Wisconsin is a great state when it comes to agriculture and farm working. And so there is some positive policies there. So we do see the potential for great policy change in Wisconsin, but there's still room to improve. Compared to some neighbors, Illinois is at number 7, Minnesota is at number 11. So it's wow. Quite a difference. Yeah.
We just have about 2 minutes left. What is the one or two policies that you think can really have the biggest impact for working people in the U.S.?
I think for all working people in the U.S. and Wisconsin as well, let's raise the wage. Let's raise the minimum wage. Let's get rid of the sub-minimum tipped wage, which yes. Traps too many, especially women, in cyclical poverty. Let's get some paid leave so people who have care responsibilities in their communities can miss a day of work to care for someone but not lose a paycheck. And let's really protect the right to organize. We know the union difference. It increases wages. It increases protection at work. You are safer. You're less likely to be injured. You have more benefits. It does matter. So if I was going to say three things, it is raise the wage, pass some paid leave, and let's protect the right to organize.
Folks, that's Dr. Caitlin Henderson, senior research at Oxfam, the largest anti-poverty organization in the world. They just published Oxfam's annual Best States to Work Index. Folks, Brian and I will put that in the blurb for today's show so you can check it out with your own eyes, but you heard it here. Raise the minimum wage, paid leave, which is a big old fat duh, right? And protect workers' rights to organize. Thank you so much for making time for us, Katie. I can't wait to have you back again. Stay tuned. The Maggie Dawn Show continues here on the Civic Media Network after these three messages.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
If you've been watching the dairy markets, barrel and block cheese prices have been going in opposite directions lately than what you're used to. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report, and Cody Cost, dairy broker analyst with EverEgg, explains what's been driving this change in our dairy markets.
So we've had the barrel valued over the block for, I'd say, since mid-July. So it's been a little bit inverse. Usually the block is valued over the barrel by about 3.5 to 4 cents. And what I think they're going to try to do this week, Pam, is they're going to try to narrow that gap at about $2.25, which if you look on a chart, there is a gap right there. And then once we get the block in the barrel at 225, I think we're really going to have to sit back and say, okay, we had an all-around negative GDT on Tuesday. Cheese was still positive for cheddar and mozzarella. We've got schools in session. We've got football coming up. So the time of the year for more buying is going to be taking place here soon.
That's Cody Koster, broker analyst with EverEgg. I'll have a look at your closing markets right after this.
Back to school. Whether you're jumping on a yellow school bus or putting that backpack on headed to campus, Bavaria Sausage is thinking about you. Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke reminding you, want to keep it simple? Do all your shopping online. BavariaSausage.com. There's a brand new website in development, so check back often and see what they've got. I know what they've got right now. Some really healthy snacks that can be included in those lunch boxes or tucked into that backpack for studying enjoyment. Those Lawn Yoggers, new flavors available all the time. And listen, if you're one of the folks dropping the kids off, you want to make life a little simpler, one brand new product that's available at the Fitchburg location, some pre-cut chicken breasts. It's all about an evolving menu that they're working on at Bavaria Sausage. So like I said, check back often. At the corner of Nesbitt Road, Fitchrona Road in Fitchburg, if you're in the area, or online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. BavariaSausage.com. Tell them the Farm Babe sent ya.
I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your closing markets for the day. December corn closed at 4.10¾. That was down 2 cents. And November beans closed at 10.23½, and that was up 2 cents. December wheat closed at 5.74¾, and that was down 6 cents. On the dairy side of things now, October Class 3 milk contract is trading at 22.86 a hundredweight. That is down 14 cents. And November Class 3 milk contract is trading at 22.49 a hundredweight, and that is down 13 cents. Barrel cheese had no change and closed at 2.25. 40-pound block cheese also had no change and closed at 2.23. And the double A butter closed up 1.5 cents and closed today at 3.16¼. Be sure to take us with you as you start heading into the field or just to the office by downloading our app at thefarmwi.com. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and cool tonight, lows down to the low 40s. A beautiful weekend is ahead with sunshine. Highs in the mid-60s Saturday and mid-70s Sunday. Highs climb through the 80s next week. Dry weather ahead with more sunshine. Currently at 62 degrees.
Save big money on supplies for your next project at Menards. From dust protection to heavy-duty construction projects, Polar Plastics has a fitting solution for you. Get a 10-foot by 25-foot roll of all-purpose plastic sheeting on sale now through September 8th. Save big on Polar Plastics products at Menards, America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals.
Save big money at Menards.
You might wonder, John Legend, how do you keep your voice sounding so
legendary?
Honey, and how do I keep my protection against COVID-19 up to date?
With a COVID shot this season, designed for recent variants.
You can get your COVID-19 shot when getting your flu shot if you're due for both, as recommended by the CDC.
The fresher, the better.
Ask your healthcare provider about getting this season's COVID-19 shot when getting your flu shot.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Jane Matinere returns to the big chair, and we are talking about the election because we are less than 2 months away, people. Join us.
Matinere on air, weekday mornings at 10.
since I met you.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel. I am sitting in for most of these segments on this Friday, September 6th, for Maggie. Maggie, thank you for giving me this opportunity to engage with your listeners, both near and far, about the major issues of our time. Just coming off of this amazing, wonderfully informative discussion with Caitlin Henderson, a senior researcher at Oxfam, all about jobs and about employment and about unions and where we are in America, the best places to work, the best states to work, the best venues in which to pursue employment, and those where we have challenges. Appreciate very much Dr. Caitlin Henderson and her conversation with you as we go forward here on your show, Maggie. Appreciate very much the insight and the information. And appreciate with equal doses Terry Barr, who's with us in these final couple of segments here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Terry, delighted to have you with me this afternoon, as always.
Oh, Jim, thank you. And what a fabulous and really interesting discussion just wrapped up. And it kind of ties into a little bit of one of the stories I'm bringing you today in what Maggie and I always like to call local but overlooked news. I pull something from different spots in the state, but we've been trying to do good news to end these Friday shows. So I have two good news stories for you today,
Outstanding.
Jim.
Let's end this Friday discussion with something upbeat and positive for all of us. Appreciate that.
The first one ties in a little bit to the discussion we were just listening to. Jobs and kind of taking a different look at I'm just going to say radishes. Mm. Who would think you could look at leafy greens and vegetables and think, this could actually be a new career path? Well, we love our farmers markets across the state,
yes,
of course.
Yes.
And we're so lucky. They continue to stock some great, fresh, locally grown food. But UW lacrosse professors took a look at our local farmers markets and said, those veggies could be a new major and a new job opportunity. The new major being offered at UW La Crosse is food and nutrition sciences. And what these professors hope to do is get students interested in health and in wellness and how food and the healthcare system can work together. And of course, we talk about the importance of food and how long it takes for you to get the food products to you. If they focus on local and the healthcare system, they believe that they've got something that could be really magical. And they also say this is needed because the Bureau of Labor Statistics is calling this a faster than average market for growth for a job opportunity. And look at us. Wisconsin is now leading the way.
We are. How wonderful. Terrific. Terrific. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So if you are attending right now or enrolling just in this first semester of the new year at UW La Crosse, I can begin to pursue a major in food and nutrition sciences there on that campus. Not only finding out the intellectual and academic side of things, but also I suspect, Terry, that it's very practical in nature. That is both for individuals, but also communities, right? As you say, where does food come from? How do we get it? How do we distribute it? How do we exchange it? How do we cook it? And how do we use it? Obviously, we know that sort of biologically, but its role in our society, right?
Yeah, isn't it fascinating? I really love this idea. And then really putting it together with health care and feeling well and how food really can make such a difference in your life. I grew up on a dairy farm in central Wisconsin. And I just remember my dad saying, how many people didn't understand where the food came from. And he would often go to schools and talk to kids about the importance of knowing knowing how far away your food is coming from, or if you can, in this situation, you know, keep it local and make it healthy. That's Absolutely. What it's all about.
And be at a farmer's market, as you say, maybe inspiring the professors there at La Crosse, but also going there and saying, you know what? I am just about as close as I can be to Terry Barr's former farm there and producing all those good products, but also understanding that, yes, indeed, it is local. It's right down the street or maybe just a few miles away. And the other thing that comes to mind is I hear you describe this wonderful story about this opportunity there on that campus. Is I was in Iraq for a couple of years and would sometimes visit what we would call, I guess, their farmers markets as well, and appreciating just that notion of how precious produce is and things that do come from farms. We have them in abundance. We go into grocery stores, and I suspect we never really think about those issues of supply chain. How did it get here? And again, a new appreciation when I was overseas to those very issues. Now you can get some academic training on it. How wonderful. How wonderful.
Yeah. Well, and it's not going to pay too poorly either. The Bureau of Labor Statistics is already estimating first year out of college, you might be able to make up to $70,000.
Oh, my goodness.
As a food and nutrition scientist. So there you go.
and probably doing even more education, right? You're not only doing the research and doing the following of the products and not only engaging again with families like yours, farmers, but also I suspect it's also about the big commercial entities too, right? That are also part of the industry and figuring out how all that fits together and then results in my going to my local grocery store and saying, look at this abundance of food and also understanding that it does have that labor impact.
Absolutely. You know, we're talking local, so that's what my second story is for you, Jim. Are you ready for this one?
I am ready for number two, Terry. Absolutely.
Okay. Do you have any pets or are you a pet lover?
I am a pet lover. I will tell you that my sister's dog was a favorite of mine, and I like to think I was a favorite of his as well. He is no longer with us, but love dogs, love cats. My other small story about pets is that I live in an old farmhouse. I don't have any pets myself, but I kind of have these gophers and I think I've got some field mice who I think are living with me in the house. And so I sort of regard them as pets, but not in the traditional sense. I do not feed them, but I enjoy their company. But you've got a more serious story, I suspect, about pets out there as well.
Oh, I enjoyed your tale, though. That's very good. So Wisconsin is actually home to the number one pet store in the country.
We are, really?
Yes. We love our pets, as we're talking about this, you and I. And the Crazy Dog Mom is the store. Wow. It's on Main Street in Stoughton, which is just south of Madison. It is receiving this recognition from the National Pets Plus magazine, which is huge. Amanda Ballweg is the owner. It is a small local business. And Amanda said she thinks she won because she believes in supporting the community by holding events to bring pet parents together. So here's some of the things she's done. An Easter egg hunt just for your dog.
Terrific, terrific, outstanding.
You don't get to participate.
Liking it already,
Yes, she's already planning a Halloween trick-or-treat just for the dogs, and she has got some of the craziest, cutest costumes that you can get for your pets as well.
Outstanding.
So, congratulations. Yeah. I think it's so important when you can talk about your small local businesses and then to see them being recognized across the country in such a wonderful way. So congratulations to the Crazy Dog Mom.
The Crazy Dog Mom is the name of the store. Yes, the Crazy Dog Mom. And Amanda Ballweg, the proprietor there. Tell us again where one can go to enjoy the offerings of the Crazy Dog Mom.
She has a store on the main drag, Main Street in Stoughton. But she also has a website if you ever want to take a peek and and take a look at what she has in the store. Wherever you live, you can order from her directly. But I think what people are really loving are these events she started planning just for the dogs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And presumably, whether you are a regular customer or not, you can participate in those events, I'm guessing, and maybe buy some of the costumes along the way. Again, October 31 coming up fairly soon. You know, as I again, at that same house where I have my pets, who are sort of invited but not really into my household, we do get routinely trick-or-treaters, and often we have the canines who show up as well with the ears or with the hats or other things and the costumes. So a wonderful thing to do, and I can go there, and right now I can get ready for Halloween, which is just next month, right? End of next month.
Well, it is, and I have to tell you, my neighbors are already in the mood. They're decorating for Halloween.
Right.
I never took mine down.
I think it's
down.
Become a bigger decorating holiday.
Right. Jess is confessing now, as we often do on the afternoon broadcast, about not taking her Halloween decorations. And Jess, they're timely once again. So why take them down, right?
Why? They're not going to do it now.
right, exactly. And I am guessing, I noticed actually, beyond just crazy dog mom, I suspect she's anticipating Thanksgiving too. I noticed already in the card store, we've already got Thanksgiving decorations coming up. And my guess is maybe if we go and talk to Amanda at the Crazy Dog Mom about dressing up our pets as pilgrims, that's an opportunity, right? Plymouth Rock and doing all of that and engaging in all sorts of good things there as well. So great.
I can picture it.
Right. We can go on all afternoon, can we not, Amanda? And with Amanda's ideas here, we can go on with that, Terry and Jess, and perhaps every, you said Easter egg hunts as well, coming up again in what, March or April of next year?
Yes, she did it first this year for the first time, and it was overwhelmingly a success. The community came out with all their doggies and just had a great time. So I think that's where Amanda thought, okay, now what else can I do? Yes. I got to do something more for all these other holidays. So there you go.
And Terry, let me ask you the same question. I'm going to guess that you do have pets, yes?
We have three cats. All of them are rescued. Mm-hmm. Two of them only have one eye. Mm-hmm. So, yes, very interesting.
but again, can be especially good participants in trick-or-treating, all kinds of things. Maybe the cats will not be all that excited about being dressed up, but still, they're a part of the family, right? Right.
Absolutely. And we do have one, when the doorbell rings, she does run to the door to see who is at the door. Yes.
That is great. And yes. they have not yet made it to Crazy Dog Mom in Stoughton, I take it. They have not yet made that trip.
No, but you know, that's not a bad idea. I bet she's got some good ideas to try to dress cats up or whatever kind of pets you may have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Crazy Dog Mom and open routinely, regular business hours every week, maybe weekends as well, right there on Main Street.
Yes.
And enjoying all of that as well. How terrific. How terrific. And again, upbeat, local, upbeat news for a Friday afternoon. That's absolutely spectacular. Very good.
Thank you, Jim. And it's a pleasure to join you.
Terry, always a pleasure to be in touch. You have a wonderful weekend. We extend the same thing to all of our listeners as well. And we'll look forward, Terry, to more local but overlooked stories. They can be serious, but again, as we talk this afternoon, they can also be affirming of the good things that are going on in our communities, including everything from pets and promoting the good things that come from our association with them, and also good food and life sciences and health sciences in our universities here as well.
Oh,
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Todd Allball Show.
There are so many traditions built around the Wisconsin Badgers, game day and the mascot, which in 1889 was a real badger. It didn't go well. Eventually, the animal was replaced by a person. An on-campus contest chose the official mascot name, Buckingham U. Badger. Still, Wisconsin's official animal is a badger. But do you know which animal almost earned this title instead? Gray squirrel? White-tailed deer? Black bear? The answer is coming up. The original badger's nickname is actually associated with lead miners in the state, not the animals. It was the 1820s, and the miners often didn't have shelter in the winters, so they lived like badgers, digging tunnels into the hillsides where they worked. So was there almost another state animal? Yes, the white-tailed deer, which later became the official wildlife animal. But the history surrounding the badgers is a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
And I never thought I'd feel this way. And as far as I'm concerned,
this is the Maggie Dawn Show on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name, Jim Santel, sitting in for Maggie, and thanking once again my colleague and friend Terry Barr for joining me in the local but overlooked segment of the Maggie Dawn Show, talking this afternoon about this wonderful new offering at UW La Crosse, food and nutrition science for undergraduates, maybe even graduate students, as that develops more, focusing on food both individually and commercially. What a wonderful offering once again in our UW system. Another reason to support our wonderful University of Wisconsin system here in our great state. And then also good reason to support our local businesses, including Crazy Dog Mom, coming with lots of good ideas to enhance the relationship between human beings and equally sentient beings, our pets out there. Terry, thank you for both of those wonderful stories, adding some better news and positive news to a time when often the news is challenging. And yes, indeed, we're going to finish up this final segment of the Maggie Dawn Show by talking about something that we necessarily need to talk about, because once again, much in the news these days, in the wake of the horrific school shooting just this past Wednesday, 14-year-old student opening fire at his Georgia high school, killing two students and two teachers before surrendering to school resource officers. And, of course, charges against the 14-year-old. Those have already been lodged, being prosecuted almost certainly in an adult court. And that happening at the Appalachia High School in Winder, Georgia. Let's talk a little bit about what happened there, and in particular, focusing upon the humanity of this as well. We know that there are students and there are also teachers who we lost in the melee, this latest horrific mass shooting in America. It is important to know them, to think about them, and recognize that every single one of these losses is profound. As I often say, all of this is human tragedy, and this is at the highest level of that human tragedy. The victims include Mason Schirmerhorn and Christian Angulo, both of them 14-year-old students at Appalachia High School, both of them killed in this horrific latest shooting in the history of America. And they were also among the victims were Christina Iremi and Richard Aspinwall. They were teachers. They were teachers at the Appalachia High School, and all of them lost to this latest horrific event. Nine other people in hospitals with injuries, all of them expected to survive. Although even that, for them too, tragedy for them beyond just their families, individuals, also cataclysmic for the community, for all of us, especially since as we digest this latest shooting, we know what in America what can remedy these kinds of things. We have got the proof, because in those states where we do in fact have reasonable appropriate conditions on the use and the sale, the transfer of firearms, we have seen that these kinds of things decrease. We know that in the 90s, for a decade, we had an assault, a ban on assault weapons, including the kind of AR-15 that was apparently the weapon used in this latest shooting there in Georgia. When we had that ban for 10 years, what happened over time? A reduction in these kinds of horrific events. We know that background checks, universal background checks, when those states have adopted those kinds of things, the incidence of firearms assaults and deaths and injuries decline. Safety initiatives, these so-called red flag laws, often known as lethal violence protective orders, where if in fact you identify a young person, a middle-aged person, an old person who is in crisis, might be a threat to themselves or another person, an appropriate process in the judicial system to go to a judge and say, you know what, that person needs assistance. And while we are getting that assistance for that person, judge, make a finding in a legal standard that that gun that that person has should be taken away from them for their safety and also for the safety of the community. Those kinds of things also produce good results in terms of reducing the kinds of things. And indeed, an awful lot of indications that in this particular shooting coming out of Georgia just this past week, the 14-year-old himself was suffering quite dramatically. We have seen accounts from members of his family who have talked about the fact that he was in crisis. And in particular, among other things, members of his extended family talking about the need for care and concern for him. An awful lot of finding already in the investigation about things that family members have disclosed about this young man and the crisis that he himself was going through. The aunt, Annie Brown, said the adults in his life let him down. Family members telling reporters that the youth who had been charged with four counts of felony murder had a troubled home life. My grandson did what he did because the environment he lived in, said his grandfather. His name is Charles Polhemos. All of these kinds of things indicating that the signs were there and the indications were there that this young man was in crisis and probably under the appropriate circumstances, people identifying the problem, doing what they can to ensure not only therapies, but also legal responses, taking away the very weapon that he used. And that leads, of course, to the other piece of this, which is the recent charging of the father, Colin Gray, charged with four counts of involuntary manslaughter, second-degree murder, eight counts of cruelty to children, not only for allowing his son to have the weapon, but also apparently turning a blind eye, maybe a deaf ear also, to the crisis that his son was in, now exposed in continuing tragedy that is this situation to the results, victimizing huge numbers of people in the community, those who have died, those who are injured, and underscoring further the human tragedy that comes when we fail as a nation and as a community to address this terrible incident of gun violence that we have in America. That should be our commission, not only as we go to vote in November, but also beyond that, as we move our legislators, our elected officials, our appointed officials, to do everything we can to invoke those things that we do, in fact, know work to address the gun violence problem in America. That needs to be our commission. And every time we have a Georgia and other state school shooting of the sort that we've seen again, we need to be thoughtful about that and recommit to a better, safer America. This has been the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel. Delighted to be with you this afternoon. Looking forward to more discussions here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. Have a good Friday, everybody. That's what friends are for. That's what friends are for. Yeah.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matinee on Air.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Dom Salvia, who joins me to talk about his new show here on Civic Media. And it's a bar band Friday night as Max Inc.'s Terry Barr brings new music and sparkling conversation.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Max Inc. on Civic Media, live in the lair with Kaylin Cole.
Have you ever walked away from a karaoke performance thinking, yeah,
That was a lot better than the original person.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if I should admit that or not.
I think he's right. Because now I know. Now we know there's a song.
Jimmy's talking on it now.
I know. Oh, you're going to get me in trouble, Jimmy.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at MaxIncRadio.com and listen live on Saturday nights, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.